acting is cheesy. The plot is stupid. I'm sorry, the plot is bad.
That's a little opening.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a time not that long ago. To a galaxy not that far away. It's going to be a star-spangled ARG presents. I'm your good buddy, your good pal, and a man with a midichlorian count as long as your forearm. It's amigo Aaron Kenobi. Today I'm joined by a man that teeters ever so slightly and leans towards the dark side. Drop to your knees, bow your head, and pay homage to your Sith Lord. It's Darth the Brick.
Yeah, do it.
Pretty evil. I think you're more than teetering towards the dark side of the Force.
I would agree with that.
So, last month, we spun the wheel. No, that's not true, Aaron. In fact, we have to fill them in on what happened there.
Yeah, what did happen? Even I forgot.
We were supposed to spin the wheel as part of the end of year special.
Yeah.
But it got cut. The producer said it ain't going to happen. And we forgot.
Yeah. But we did spin
it. We did spin that wheel off camera.
And we did record that spin.
Oh, we did. And Aaron, do you know where you can find that wheel spin?
I don't.
Well, you can find that as a cute little exclusive on the new Patreon, the Retro Rewind.
You might as well get into that before we get into the show proper. What's the scoop on this new updated Patreon to Brent?
Well, Aaron, as you know, before we had the Atari ST, we had the Coco, we had the R. Sinclair,
yep,
and ARG Presents.
Correct.
We've taken all of those Patreons and we've meshed them into one little home that we're calling the Retro Rotation.
Very good.
And when you go to the Retro Rotation's Patreon page, you can still just support one show. That's cool. Or you can support the whole Sunday package. Now, we also have slight change with the anchor and the podcast side of things. I think you wanted to talk about that.
Yeah, just briefly. And thankfully, we won't ever have to talk with this ever again, hopefully, after this month. But we, due to the way, you know, Anchor was our, it's always been our source for all of our, you know, shows, our audio. They were bought recently by Spotify due to some real goofy policies that they put in place. We're basically getting rid of the individual podcast feeds for individual shows. So if you listen to ARG on its own podcast feed or R. Sinclair or whatever, those are going to go away. You'll be able to catch all the shows on all the network, including our four shows, plus mine and Boat on Amigos. They're all on the Amigos Retro Gaming channel. They all come in on the same feed. You just pick and choose the ones you want. You don't have to listen to anything you don't want to. No muss, no fuss. It makes it easier for us, but we sort of had our hand forced, you know, by a powerful force. And speaking of the force, the Brent,
yes,
that leads me to talk about this week's game choice. Or wheel choice, because I'm excited about this one, by the way. It's Star Wars-ish games. Star Wars-ish games. These are games that are Star Wars-like.
Yes.
But they're not officially licensed by Star Wars.
Correct.
You know, now, I want to get into this a little bit here at the top of the show, because, you know, for people that, you know, there's a lot of people that are young. They don't understand what was going on back in May of 1977. I remember, because I was there, brother. That's the year a little movie called Star Wars released, May 25th, 1977. And I can tell you right now, if you weren't alive back then, this was a happening. There's never seen anything like it. Not to this day. People went nuts over this. Now, I remember when they showed previews on TV. I was a little kid because in May of 77, I was only like 5 years old, after six, something like that, real young. And I saw the previews. I said, listen, Dad, I've never asked to go to anything. I want to go see that movie. And Dad was like, okay. He was down, and we went. It was a big deal. Show you how big, with a budget of $11 million, this thing made $775 million in 1977 money.
Yeah.
Today, $15 kajillion.
Well, not quite, but yeah.
And so the series was kicked off right there. Now, almost instantly, when you have a successful movie that hits like this, much like, say, a Jaws or something like that, there were movies that were like changed the way things went. And that was, you know, all your summer blockbusters, Raiders of the Lost Ark, stuff like that. This stuff, by the way, all guys, same guys were involved in all these, as you mentioned. But this stuff changed the way that people handled their business.
Yeah.
And one of the things that sprung up from the Star Wars phenomenon were cloned films. All right. Cloned films of Star Wars. There were a few of these cloned films. I think your mileage may vary on what you would consider a cloned film of Star Wars. The one that comes to my mind was a movie, it was a made-for-TV movie, I believe, called Battle Beyond the Stars, a Roger Corman spectacular. It had John Boy from the Waltons. It had Hannibal from the A-Team in there. It had a very voluptuous Sybil Danning, of course, because it's Roger Corman. I love this movie. I just watched it like a couple months ago. Another thing I remember seeing all the time on HBO, they had a little short movie called Hardware Wars. I don't know if you've ever seen that, where blenders and screwdrivers stuff fight in space. It was a real popular short back in the day. That's another one. But, I mean, there were a million. You could think of all the games and movies and ripoffs that came from Star Wars over the years. And so, turns out, stunningly, games followed suit.
Yeah.
amazingly. And so it was our task this week, Brent, to talk about a couple. Now, before we get to it, you were not born when Star Wars came out,
no,
I believe.
No, I would have been born probably while I was still in the theater. Well, no, it would have been out by then.
Do you remember your first exposure to the franchise, the original franchise? Throw out the rest of that crap. And do you remember, were you ever caught up in a wave of Star Wars fandom?
No.
Really? Not a fan?
I can't say it's totally true. When episode one came out, now this is obviously much, much later, we wanted to do the whole get hyped like they did back in the day phenomenon. We camped out at the theater to be first in line to buy tickets that we'd have to come back the later day to actually see. I mean, we stayed in the parking lot with me and a couple friends overnight.
This is to see episode one.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, don't, trust me. The disappointment was, holy cow. And you're out there with the, you know, the super fans.
Yeah.
And we weren't super fans. We were purely there for the experience.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say weird. It's a unique culture of people who get super into the fandom.
Yeah.
And because the soundtrack had already been released, right? And they were playing the soundtrack in the parking lot. And you get your super fandom that was playing the music and listened to it and really enjoyed it. Then you had the super duper fandom that didn't want to hear the music because they didn't want to get spoiled before the show.
I thought you were going to say the super duper fandom were out there performing the music.
Oh, no, they were.
That would have been great. Dude. They were in their outfits, in the cantina scene.
They were tons of people in full garb.
Yeah.
But the two groups clashed. The theater had to actually come out and stop them from fighting.
Geek Wars.
And they eventually decided that they had to turn the music off because it was spoiling it for other people.
Let me ask you, this story doesn't touch on what we're talking about today, but what was the feeling of all these geeks as they walked away from the theater?
Well, when you're that invested in something, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. I, however, was not super invested. And I remember, first of all, there was a point in the movie. It was when young Anakin had first been on screen. And bless the small child he was when he was this actor, but it was not good.
No.
And Anakin's mom was the absolute worst.
I'm so glad to hear you say that. She was the dirt worst.
So
she couldn't actually have a wet sack.
When they were on screen interacting with each other, she said they're going,
yeah. Oh, yeah. And don't forget Anakin's little friends either.
Yeah.
They couldn't act either. But there was, listen, I'm going to blame the acting for part of it, but the material was
Yeah, they had nothing to work with.
You're talking about the fandom, everybody getting excited for the first one. This reminds me of stuff that happened throughout my life. When you hear about something that happened in the 60s or 70s, you get real excited. I remember one time, you used to hear all the hippies. They would all go Woodstock, right?
Yeah.
And what they'd do? They made another Woodstock, and all the hippies were gone, and they just trashed Woodstock. Same thing, what happened in the war protest.
Yeah.
People protested. When I lived in Huntington, we went to Desert Storm. One dude went in the middle of 4th Avenue with a can of motor oil and laid down and just dumped it on himself. That was his protest. So, everyone wants to sort of recreate the stuff they read about. And I can understand when Star Wars came out, people are hyped. Plus, it's been so long. Even I was hyped. It's hard to believe because that's what I was really excited about Star Wars when they, you know, beat it out of me as they have. They've beaten Star Wars right out of me. But, you know, I miss being excited about it.
Yeah.
It's the way it goes. But I am excited to dig into some games this week because I think we've got a couple diverse entries here, Brent. I'm going to let you lead the dance this week. What did you bring to the table for Star Wars this game?
We definitely went in two different directions with this.
I went into the proper direction. You went into an incorrect direction. We'll get on that.
I chose The Last Starfield.
Fighter.
I'm sorry.
You get the name right.
The Last Starfighter. This is a movie widely accepted to be a Star Wars clone.
No,
I know you don't agree.
I don't agree with that at all.
I know you don't agree, but it is widely accepted as such.
I bet anyone in the chat will chime in otherwise.
Well, I'm just telling you how the masses view it.
I don't care.
And it definitely has a lot of the same elements. Of course, all these type of movies have a lot of the same elements. It's the hero's journey. The guy or girl that doesn't want to be a hero but is thrust in the position, and he changes and he accepts and he goes out and he perseveres over the conflict. But The Last Starfighter, when it came out in theaters, it did not do so well.
No.
And in fact, it did real bad. Yeah. And it was
irritating.
It was unexpected. This was supposed to be a big hit.
Yeah.
And they prepped for it to be a big hit before the movie came out, of course, with merchandise, games, tie-ins, all this stuff happening. And considering that the game is, I mean, very loosely based around a video game, for those who don't know the last...
Very loosely?
Well, I mean...
It's whole movie's based on one arcade machine.
Well, yeah, but that's the very beginning of the movie. And by the time Act 1 is over, the video game's never mentioned again.
But sure, at the end of it, it's mentioned too.
Anyway... Not in any plot sense. The Last Starfighter, for those who don't know, it's about a kid in a rural town who has got a high score on a video game.
It's at Trailer Park.
Yeah. Well, really? Yeah. That's a distinction that matters?
Because
that's a distinction that matters?
It's the happiest, cleanest trailer park in the whole world.
It's not a distinction that matters. So he scores a high score on this video game, and the video game is actually an arcade machine, by the way. Is actually recruited. This was a recruiting tool for an unknown, unseen galactic space force.
Yeah.
So when they come down to pick him up, and he's like, he doesn't understand, and it's his journey of understanding what the conflict actually is. You're introduced to the bad guys who has one of the best death lines of all time.
Yeah, you got that right.
Wait,
that's great.
And
it's got the little gimmick. It's got a little eye visor gimmick.
So video games for this were hyped up. Everyone was expecting to see the cabinet in arcades. They were expecting to get it on every home console known to man. And then that didn't happen. And sad story about the arcade cabinet that was in the movie destroyed.
Oh.
They wrecked it.
Those idiots. They've screwed us again. I'm sure geeks have reproduced
it. It has been recreated quite faithfully, by the way. But the software was never... There was no actual software made that went into that cabinet. Yeah,
you can tell that when you watch the movie.
So the fans of the show have actually recreated that as well. And you can play the actual game that was supposed to be in that cabinet right now on the web. You can go and play it. But... That's not what we're talking about today. No. We're talking about The Last Starfighter on the Atari 800.
Yeah.
And I bet some people are like, hey, I don't remember a Last Starfighter on the Atari 800. That's because, along with many other games based on The Last Starfighter, it was never released. In fact, The Last Starfighter had many games on many platforms that were very different from each other, but they were all called The Last Starfighter. And when the show bombed, they took those titles and made other titles with them.
Mm.
The Last Starfighter for the Atari 800 turned into Star Raiders 2.
Yeah.
Now, this actually ticked off a lot of people because between Star Raiders and Star Raiders 2, completely different games. Because all they did was take, basically took what they had for Last Starfighter and just gave it a new name and put it on the market. But let's talk about the game proper. You can play this. I mean, if you've played Star Raider 2, you've played what the Last Starfighter was in the beta. But you can actually go and find prototypes of the Last Starfighter that were like 80% complete.
Yeah.
And fans have filled in the holes enough that it will get it up and running. So in the Last Starfighter, you are Defender of the Planets. And you go out there and shoot the bad guy ships as you're flying around, protect the home world, bombing oncoming threats, and you are treated to a vast universe. You guard one planet, and then you can go to the map screen and fly to the sun, recharge your stuff, and then fly off to the next planet to fix it, and you're hunting down the big bads of the game. It's your typical, for the most part, a very typical shooter, a space shooter. I think the few highlights are you can actually drop things onto the planet.
Yeah.
That's kind of a neat concept because you get this split screen type view when you're flying around.
Well, you see, like, you're over the planet, so you can actually see targets on it plus space.
Yeah.
You're like skimming the atmosphere.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's awesome.
The HUD in this is okay, not great. The main part of the screen is about the middle-ish three-fourths, that's probably generous, three-fifths of the screen. And you've got a score line at the top, and then at the bottom, you've got a HUD that shows your weapons, because they can overheat if you shoot too much. It shows your armor, your ship durability, and it shows your bomb count. In the middle, you've got a very rudimentary radar type thing. And then the right side of your screen has all these pictures that are changing and flashing and doing stuff, but actually represent nothing.
But they're cool. They look cool.
You've got that on the left as well.
Yeah.
You've got a lot of HUD elements that are just nothing. They're completely there for show. And they actually take up a majority of the HUD. Flying in this is very weird. At least I felt. You don't really feel like... You feel like you're stationary and you're kind of tilting back and forth rather than actually flying forward at any point.
It's like you're in a forced orbit. Like, you can't just go wherever you want. You sort of have to... You're orbiting the planet. So you can't just, so guys can take advantage of you by staying out just above you.
Yes.
Or just outside of your ability to spin. Your ship's not what I would call dynamic on the turn.
No.
This thing's like... It's like a space... like Lincoln from the 70s. It's the way it flies. You know, it does not turn on the dime.
You can go left and right, but it's going to cost you. Aaron, what did you think about this game as an overall package?
Well,
either this or Star Raiders 2.
Why can't you say The Last Starfighter?
No.
You said Star Raiders 2.
Yeah, because this is basically Raiders 2.
So here's the funny thing about this. So, flashback to when I was a younger man.
All right.
So what year did you say this thing came out?
This came out in 84.
84, okay. So, I was babysitting for my neighbors back in those days. And they had Atari 800, Atari 400. Hell, and this game came into our possession as The Last Starfighter. Even back in the old days.
Which is weird.
The prototype was out there because I played this. And we had, so until years later, I had no idea this wasn't like an original game. And we never played a lot of Star Raiders 2, ever. It was always, you're underselling everything here. Allow me to jump in. First of all, you're underselling The Last Starfighter, which is a great film. There's so many good scenes in that movie.
I didn't say it was bad.
Including the Death Blossom. People know what I'm talking about. It was awesome. Also, your alien co-pilot's awesome. The guy that recruits you is awesome. The bad guy's awesome. Awesome. It was one of the first movies... Aside from Tron, to use computer-generated graphics,
yeah.
CGI everywhere, and it looks good.
For better or for worse.
No, it held up, brother, I think. It held up. And then, but, you know, I could be wrong. So, if you look at this game, I played a lot of the old Star Raiders. Right? Star Raiders is a great game. It was on all the systems, a lot of fun. Calling this Star Raiders 2, I don't think that's an insult at all.
Well,
it has the map. It's got a lot of stuff to do, and it's much more action-oriented than Star Raiders.
That's the problem, though.
Now, listen, if they don't like it, tough. Go back and play Star Raiders 1, all right? It's called Evolution. Look at the graphics on this thing.
Yeah, it's really
good. Rotating planets. There's different planets. It's not all one planet. You're shooting targets on the ground from space. That's, you know what they call that, brother? Mass drivers. You're dropping a hammer. You're also fighting guys in the air. You didn't even talk about how smooth and awesome the ships are as they come out of formation and they turn.
And the scaling.
Anyone that watched the original Battlestar Galactica, in the opening sequence when they show the title screen, it shows a lot of these Cylon ships. Two or three of them take this wide turn and dive. It's exactly what it looks like. It's awesome. The ships, the enemy ships in this are great. You get a couple different types.
Yeah.
You've got like a base star looking gimmick again for Battlestar Galactica. You've got several things you can do in this. You can fly around. You can. There's a warp sequence that's really cool. I like this movie. I mean, I like this game.
I thought the warp sequence was kind of lame.
It was cool. Listen, you got to think, this is 84,
I get
what
it.
Are you doing?
I get it.
This was a cool game.
Yeah.
Now, was this totally Last Starfighter-y? I mean, it's got an opening scene where it shows the ship, it plays the song, and it reads at the bottom of the screen is a scroll that tells you what's going on in the Last Starfighter. When you die or when you lose, it tells you that your Federation had to surrender.
Yeah.
You know, so it's over. You don't get the scenes. Like, what made the Last Starfighter so cool? In some ways, it's a lot like another game we played on Atari, where you go across the flagship and you're in the movie. That's a lot of what they do is they take their ship and shoot the much larger ship. They make passes
strafing
on it.
Runs.
So like the Dreadnought Factor. So I would love to, if you could combine this and the Dreadnought Factor into one game, that would be then you would have Last Starfighter. As it is, it's probably not too long a step to convert Star Raiders 2 over to, Last Starfighter over Star Raiders 2, just because it's a couple little swaps, take out a scroll or whatever, probably not a big deal. But I thought this was a fun game. It is irritating that you can't, when you move your ship, it's clumsy.
It's weird.
It's not as agile as the ship in Last Starfighter.
Yeah,
it was
its whole business.
Right. That thing, you had a better, and if you, and by the way, if you saw the kid play the game in Last Starfighter, like, it's nothing like that.
Nothing
I will
like
say
it.
That. So if that's what you're looking for, you're in for disappointment. But I think this is graphically, this is one of your better 8-bit Atari titles. I think it looks great. When that planet hones into view, it's astoundingly good.
A few problems I had with this is it feels weird. The moving of the reticle, it always feels like a struggle, and it always feels like you're almost going to target the ship, and then the bad guy ship will just go and just warp away, or you know, or fly far enough away that you can't just immediately target them again and get to them.
It's super gratifying, though, when you lock on to a couple of these things.
It is.
You shoot a stream up them, because when they blow up, they don't just go disappear.
No, they blow up with passion.
Yeah, they blow up real cool. I mean, I love that. There's a lot of good explosions in the game, too.
Also, this doesn't have any form of the Death Blossom.
Is an oversight.
Which is unfortunate. I don't know if that was planned on being programmed in and just
You've seen Last Starfighter back in the day, right? Let me ask
I've watched it many times.
Has anything got you more fired up than the Death Blossom? I mean, honestly, that's one of the best, because they're screwed. They're totally screwed. And then they Death Blossom and they kill a whole fleet. That's awesome, I think. I love that movie. I love that bit.
I went back and watched a lot of the classic scenes from that show.
Yeah.
It's better in my... It was better in my memory than it was on the screen.
Yeah.
But it's still incredible. And the bad guy's death scene, like we talked about, is iconic.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, the Street Fighter movie.
Yeah,
M. Bison gives the, for me, it was a Tuesday.
That was another great moment.
Those are two lines that live beyond the film and geek culture.
Yeah. I loved it. I loved the movie. I mean, it was right in my wheelhouse. By the way, this is an HBO special for the people that sat around watching HBO. Our grandmother had HBO. We didn't have it, but I'd go to her house. Every once in a while, I could catch this. So I've seen it several times. Just get you primed up. So, yeah, I think this is a big winner.
Aaron, what did the fans think?
Well, we got a review here from Jocko who chimes in. He says, even though it isn't 3D polygon, the intro in this is so well done and about as faithful to the movie arcade game as you could get with chunky pixels. I agree. That part, they did get right.
Yeah, the rotation and stuff was really good.
The game itself is a frantic blast, everything in sight, space shooter. But unlike an on-rails game, you can get to fly location to location to attempt to wipe out Xur and the Kodan Empire. You can also fly by the sun to top off on your energy, repair your ship, and work on your tan. But don't stay long or you'll melt your ship. It's worth doing once. I've never done that.
I've never done it.
To see the cool visual effects. I'm glad he mentioned that. Everything about this game is quite fun. The explosion effects are well done.
Super well done.
And there's a lot of game even if it's a little repetitive at times. The Kodan fighters, while simple sprites, do some really cool rotation animations that give them the feeling of fast, maneuverable fighters flying through space coming to get you. My only complaint with the game is that it often feels like your ship is quite slow, and trying to take down the enemy motherships can be quite frustrating, as some of them can zip about while you plod along slowly. Yeah, I agree. The movie didn't bomb too badly, so it's amazing that this didn't get released as the movie tie-in, but as an Atari 800 game in its own right, this is good. Well worth checking out. 8 out of 10. I agree with him on that. I'm going to try that sun gimmick.
Yeah.
You know, this is one, when you picked it, now I'm going to get back to this. I'm not letting you off the hook. This is not a Star Wars ripoff.
Yes, it is.
The last Starfighter had nothing to do.
Absolutely a Star Wars ripoff.
Explain. What similarities do they have at all?
The main protagonist in both movies is like what starts off as a whiny little kid. Or a whiny young adult.
He's not whiny. The whole trailer park loves that guy. They love
you
him.
You need to go back and watch the show.
They love him. He's got a girlfriend here at trailer park.
He gets his Obi-Wan in the robot guy that teaches him everything and then ends up dying. And then they have to go and blow up the main mothership, which is basically a Death Star.
You could say that. You could mix any movie up to there. I will say, I looked at some lists of Star Wars ripoffs, and I saw this featured on one list out of all the ones I looked at.
Well, I don't know what to tell you, man.
I guess I can't complain too much, but I personally think this is an abomination and an affront to a fine film, in my humble opinion. Is that all you got?
What else is there to have?
Well, I'm taking over then. It's time to get down to the nitty gritty, brother. So when I decided on what Star Wars just games to look at, my first thought was to go back to the old arcade days, because there are tons of old arcade games that just have fake trench battle or some TIE fighters, you know, and they all have Star or War somewhere in the title. They one of those is replaced with space, so you'll see stuff like that. But I want to try something different. My goal this year is to try a lot more. I want to go out and get back into some of the old systems we don't talk about that much anymore. And so originally the game I picked, I said I was going to play on the Spectrum, but I ended up picking it and playing it on another machine. And the game I picked this week is 3D Star Strike. Some people call it Star Strike 3D. Either way, I'm serious. I've seen it both. This is a game released originally on the ZX Spectrum, which is where I played it first. And then it was released the next year on the Amstrad CPC, which I then played. And finally, it was released the same year as the CPC version on the Enterprise 128, which is ultimately where I ended up going with the old Enterprise. For those that don't remember, we covered the Enterprise many, many moons ago. It's the last time we really talked about it.
It's been a while.
So I want to jump back on the Enterprise, USS Enterprise, just as a quick refresher, Brent. The Enterprise was a computer developed in Britain by Intelligent Software. This thing was going to be double awesome, but it took too long to get released. It didn't get released till June 23rd of 1995, and by then, it wasn't that big a deal. But a couple years before that, when it was going to be released, it would have been huge.
Yeah.
Because it had some stuff that you didn't see on the other machines. It had a Zilog Z80 at 4 megahertz, but this thing had Amiga-like components. It had separate ASICs for, controlling different parts of the computer, so it would relieve the Zilog of some of the duties. So it made it a fairly powerful machine. Again, since it was going to be released in 83, it would have been awesome. They had two variants, the Enterprise 64 to 128. Get this, I don't remember talking about this the first time I was reading. This thing had several different names that it went by over the years, including the Oscar, which is horrible.
Yeah.
The Elon, which is funny. And the Samurai, which obviously would have been the correct choice.
No, I disagree. I think Enterprise is way better.
Well, I like the Samurai. I like them both, actually. They sold 80,000 of these things before it all went south.
This I think it went south because it sold 80,000.
Yeah. And then they went into debt. Someone bought up all their stock and sold it off, and it was a German outfit. So they got hosed. And so I thought when I saw that this got released on the Enterprise, and I'd already played the ZX, and I'd already played the Amstrad version. So I thought, heck, let's see if I can get this thing running again. And so I downloaded me an emulator, and after some interesting fumblings, I ended up getting this work, and I was so happy. Because at first, all I could do was load up the loading screen, and nothing would happen. But if I read this other file, it worked. I was so happy. Get it working. So I'll be looking at the Enterprise version. This was published and developed by an outfit called Real Time Games Software Limited. Real Time did some games, you know, over the years, just to name a few. And they worked on a lot of different machines. They did they released Elite for DOS, the Amiga. They did Night Flight on the QL. They also did a sequel to Strike, which we'll talk about a little bit. They did Star Glider, Carrier Command, which is, if you want a funny episode to watch, go back and watch me and Boat do Carrier Command on R. Sinclair. It turns ugly real quick. That's the bad episode, but that thing's fresh in my mind. They do a few others here. So they did some stuff. The fellows that were responsible for this, and by the way, everything I looked up, it was hard to look up stuff on the Enterprise. Like, there's not a lot of stuff out there. I will tell you, the people that developed, I'm not 100% sure who converted this to the Enterprise. I'll be honest with you. I couldn't find any name. I can tell you who developed the game initially. Three people. Ian Oliver, who worked on both the Star Strike games. He also did Star Glider, Star Fox, and 3D Tank Duel. Graham Baird, who did Star Fox, Star Glider, the sequel, and 3D Tank Duel. Seems familiar. And then a guy named Andy Onions, who also worked on Carrier Command and 3D Tank Duel. So, what is this game? Well, to talk about this game appropriately, we've got to go back in time yet again to the original Star Wars, the arcade game. Remember that? Made you believe again, right? This thing came out from Atari in the arcades, a beautiful color vector arcade machine, one of the most sought after, one of the most prized. I had a chance to buy this on numerous occasions. I didn't do it. I'm kicking myself now.
You never maintain it.
What? Take off. You're right. But one thing you have to understand if you're an arcade guy is that the monitors and these things, like, melt.
Take it.
Yeah, and they don't make them anymore. Well done. Hold on. Brent violently threw his microphone at me.
Was caught in the explosion of the color vector monitor.
That's one of the dumbest things I've seen you do right there. So, obviously the arcade machine, big hit. I mean, big. And so, everyone knew there'd be a home version if they could pull it off. There was no doubt. So you're probably thinking to yourself, well, that's no problem. We know, like, for example, the Spectrum got the home version, right? You're right. In 87, Domark, who published, like, they published all the home computer versions that they did to Amigas too. They did do a pretty competent version of this on all the 8-bits, including the Spectrum. The funny thing is, the game I'm talking about came out 2 years earlier. So this predates that. I think 87, that's late in the race for the Sinclair.
It's still 84 on this.
Yeah, it was 84 for the ZX, 85 on the Amstrad and the Enterprise.
Oh, okay.
It's funny because on the Enterprise home screen, it does say 84.
Okay, Just making sure I'm not insane-ish.
Here is the flavor text. Now, keep in mind, Star Wars-ish. So they couldn't just say Luke Skywalker went out to kill Darth Vader. So it says, suddenly, there were the outsiders appearing in massive fleets on the edge of the galaxy. They seemed uninterested in conquest, only destruction. Earth fleets decimated, and the Federation lay on the brink of collapse. In desperation, Federation Command chose to strike directly at the outside control centers. These immense bases were constructed within hollowed-out moons. All right, you get it? To destroy them required a direct hit on the base's reactor systems in the very center of the moon. The only access to the reactor was through two cooling ports within the base's equatorial, I'm going to make sure I say this way, equatorial ducts. That's where you had to go, the old equatorial duct. To reach these, however, the attacker was forced to run the gauntlet of the base's heavy ground and space defenses. To penetrate these, a new generation of starfighters were created, the Star Strike series. So, to recap, hollowed out moon, not Death Star, right? That's not a trench run. That's the equatorial duct. What is the, what does that even mean? Is that a real word, equatorial?
See, this is where I think you and I interpreted the assignment differently. This is not a Star Wars game. This is a clone.
No.
This is a rip-off.
This has many differences, which I'll get into momentarily.
Oh, yeah, it sounds different. Listen, as night and day so far.
Do you recall Luke, Han, Chewie? Were they flying down the equatorial duct? And so I don't think so. So don't give me that. So your job then is to go down the and blow up this hollow moon. Now, that is, you know, that's not a space station. That's a moon. See, that's totally different from Star Wars. So this game is broken down into several different levels. All right. On the first level of this game, you are in your Stri-Striker and you're being bombarded by evil fighters. Now, admittedly, some of these fighters do look like a person's bow tie, for example. And one of them happens to have little curves on the sides of their wings. Otherwise, they're completely different from a tie fighter in every way. When you play this game, I played this with keyboard. On most of the systems, you can play with a joystick and you can or keyboard, whichever one you want. And you have to, on this level, you move a cursor around trying to blow up TIE fighters or whatever comes in front of you.
That's spelled T-Y fighters.
You drive around space, so it's sort of you kind of have freedom, but mostly don't in a rail.
No, it's very rail, yeah.
And then eventually, as you work your way through those guys, you will, and what's neat about this, I will say, in between rounds, there's a cut screen that tells you what your next part of the mission is.
Yeah.
And they're very well rendered. I thought they looked real nice. The fighters you go after will launch like these large sparkly projectiles at you that they grow bigger as they get near you.
Yeah, they scale.
If you shoot these things, you're good to go. They will take points off of your shield. Let's talk about your display here. In the upper part of the screen, you see like you're looking at your front window. The bottom part of your fighter is split into little control panels. You've got a shield bar on one side. You've also got score. You've also got the level you're on and the status of the
shield.
It's sort of like Star Trek, that part. But it sort of gives you an extra bonus to know what's going to be the shield. And then
Laser heat. Yeah.
Then I never had that come into play all that much, so laser heat. And so then you move on, you're shooting the fighters. They kind of come in like circular, you know. Once you get past them, you get another status screen that says, okay, time to go through their ground defenses. All right. Now, on the first level of the ground defenses screen, you're flying again, sort of on rails. And you're going across the top of the planet, and there are little red boxes that are shooting fireballs at you. And you've got to take these things out one at a time to get through this level. And they're shooting. You got to also shoot the stuff that are shooting at you. Now, as you progress in this game, this becomes more difficult. Eventually, you're going to have to fight not only those little red boxes, but towers that shoot that are green with a yellow top that also shoot fireballs. So you've got to shoot low and high. You do have some maneuverability here, but you can't just fly off wherever you want. It's actually quite similar to Last Starfighter. You can't really go where you want. Then it's time to go down the equatorial trench, Brent. You know you're in trouble when the trench gets involved, brother. This is neat. You're flying down the trench, and occasionally the trench is basically wide enough for your ship, and also in front of you have these like barriers that will appear that you've got to maneuver up and around or down under. On the sides of the equatorial trench are red squares that shoot fireballs at you, and you have to make your way down the trench without getting hit too many times. Then, this is where this thing differentiates itself from Star Wars considerably. This has a extra screen here, all right?
Yeah.
On the extra screen, it's time to take out the final part of the planet, the core, to blow the planet up. Now, this is actually the trickiest part of the game, in my opinion. You go down this long hallway, and then you come out into this open space. And in front of you, you see another little square in the middle. And then you see these two, on either side of it, you see these flashing boxes that are spinning around. You've got to move your cursor to blow up both those boxes. If you don't, There are these wavy lines in front of the box you're going to fly through.
And yeah.
If you hit those, that means you got to redo the whole equatorial run again. Again, back out of the equatorial trench. You're back in. If you do hit the two squares, you get a scene where you get another screen, a status screen, and it shows you out in space, and it shows the planet blow up in this beautiful display. And then your guy warps away, and a very cool warpy thing happens. Then you go to the next level. And again, this will grow and get more difficult with every level. The fighters get harder. The trip down the equatorial trench gets more deadly.
Yeah.
Make it less easy for you to maneuver your Star Strike ships down the trench. The ground forces and towers get more effective. There's more numerous. A lot more enemies here as you go through. Brent, I thought this was quite good. Now, I will say, I played all three of these. I played all three versions of this, and I would rank them. So here's how I thought they ironed out. The ZX version is the most colorless.
Yeah.
All right? But it's good. It's sharp. This was like a game that the ZX was made to play. It plays well. All right? The Amstrad version of this is more colorful, but a little, like, choppier, in my opinion. But also, still pretty good. All right? I thought it was pretty good. Now, I don't want to be a homer here, but when I loaded this up on the Enterprise, I wasn't expecting much. I thought it was the best one. Now, I want to preface this by saying the following. I played this on emulation, not even on the Mister. I had an emulator. Okay, now, we all know emulators, you never know. It could have been faster than it was on an actual Enterprise, so I take this with a grain of salt. But I thought you got all the color. It was the smoothest. It was the most fun I had of the three was on the Enterprise. I think the Enterprise did a great job with this. I will say, if you play any of the three, you're getting pretty much the same experience. There's no duds.
Yeah.
This was a well-programmed game. It was very cleverly done, and I think this is a big winner. It's got a following, and if believe it or not, a fan-made modern remake of Star Strike has been put out. It's freely available in the net. I kid you not. I think it plays on Windows, and it's good to go. Now, I didn't try it, but it looked pretty interesting. They did de-Star Wars this shit a little bit, you know, but, I mean, it looks pretty good. But this right here, I'm telling you right now, if I was a kid in 84, 85, and I was dying for some Star Wars, there was nothing around, I got nothing, you know, this would have been, I would have ate this up with a spoon. Because I've played a lot of these home clones of Star Wars. Like, this right here is your tippity-top grade A version. And again, these systems, for whatever reason, could do the vector stuff real well.
Yeah.
And I think the Enterprise, of the three, is great. All of them great, but I think it's the best one. Your thoughts?
Well, a few things we have to cover here. If this was made, if everything shifted forward, right?
Yeah.
Video games were lagged behind, but this all happened in 2020. Disney would stomp a mud hole in these people for copyright infringement.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of clones.
This is not... They did a very minimal job of masking what this was.
Yeah. Because
this was clearly a reproduction of the arcade game.
There's a little bit extra.
Come on. So...
They're hollow planets. Equatorial trench.
That out of the way, I think this plays... Well,
yeah,
it has some slowdown, but it's not so bad that you don't want to play it. It's hard for me to like this more than the arcade game because I can't separate the two, right? I love the arcade game.
Yeah,
who doesn't? Especially with the yoke controls.
Oh yeah,
I think the controls on this are fine. However, keyboard is not a yoke, and the yoke just feels so good.
Yeah,
which
it's most painful on the very first screen when you're having to move that.
Anything
that
you have to move with it a lot, it hurts. Which is my biggest hangup. Why would I play this instead of playing the arcade Star Wars?
That's not what we're here for.
I understand. But I want that to be in your head. This is good. It's real good. But there's better versions of this that exist. I'm not saying don't go play this. And it is that one scene, the final scene, where you have to shoot out both side pockets.
Yeah.
Makes this worth at least giving this a shot.
Yeah.
It is the one, it is literally the only thing that is different in the entire rest of the game over the arcade game it's based off of. But it does make it feel different enough because it's a very intense scene. It's very quick. It's literally 3 or 4 seconds and you either win or you lose. It replaces in the arcade game where you have to line up and shoot one down into the trench after the trench run.
Yeah.
Which that was always an intense part of that. The difference being where that's at the end of the trench run, they have to give you that padding, right? Where there's nothing going on. So you just line up, put it right over the hole, just hit the button a bunch and you win in the arcade.
It's much harder.
This, there is a cutscene beforehand,
but
you can't control anything. So as soon as it drops you into the last scene, you've got to maneuver and shoot these two things very quickly. Now, I got into a rhythm of it. And once you do kind of figure it out, quote unquote, it's probably the easiest part of the game.
Oh, really? Boy, I didn't get that rhythm.
But the experience to get to that point is enjoyable. It's enough fun. There's enough good gameplay to get to that point that I think this is worth checking out. Now, I did not play this on the Enterprise, but I'm watching the footage here.
Which, because I told you the CPC originally.
Well, yeah. Well, you told me lots of things.
That's not your fault. That was an Aaron thing.
The footage on this is spectacular.
Yeah.
Spectacular.
And it doesn't have like the color bleed
that right.
You're used to. It's sharp. I mean, again, if the emulator is accurate, and again, we never know, and this is something that we have to fight with all the time on ARG, then this, I thought this was gold.
Yeah.
You know, the funny thing about the Enterprise, and we covered it, gosh, years ago. I can't remember what we played on, to be honest with you. But you only had 80,000 units move. All right, so you've got a ceiling right there. Now, I'm sure when this released, this was 85. It just came out, okay? So they may have had high hopes. But this tells me that you've got something here you could have done something with. And I read a lot of people mention that there are painfully few good commercial games for the Enterprise.
Yeah.
Which, and again, keep in mind, this thing was just coming in 83. It's a real tragedy that it couldn't meet their deadlines to get this thing out. But, I mean, and all of Star Wars aside, like, it's a great execution, and I've got to give the programmers and the designers, everybody credit on this, and a scene you're talking about at the end where you after you're through the equatorial duct and you have to blow up the core of the planet, I will say, they did fit the flavor text, because it does look like you come out into a big chamber, like it's the center of a planet.
Yeah.
And it does look like you're going to shoot something, so I will say, they did the bare minimum you can do.
Yes.
To make this different. But I mean, if I was a kid, I would have been ecstatic over this. We did get a review from our good buddy Pajaka, who chimed in. A really playable classic Star Wars arcade knockoff, and there are quite a few around back in the day. I would say, however, this one is a blatant copy, and it's the sort of thing that would have gotten a cease and desist in this day and age. Everything from Star Wars Arcade is in here, but it does have an extra Destroy the Reactor bonus game, which is a nice plus. And actually, 3D Star Strike has another plus over Star Wars, is I can use a joystick. On the CPC movie game, I played with keys only, and while it looks amazing, the keys weren't a great experience. Overall, I found the 3D Star Strike was much more playable and fun. Look-wise, 3D Star Strike is a bit more blocky, but what that gives you is a smaller play area, and more importantly, you can move the crosshairs around a lot faster, so it feels a lot better. Ultimately, a really solid game, and even if you're not a Star Wars fan, this is a good game to check out. 9 out of 10. So, huge score from Pajaka. Now, you know, just in closing, the Brent, and he's not wrong, there were tons of Star Wars ripoff games that were released, and I will say, I would like to knock the Domark version, because Domark, that's what I don't like, but I will say, at least the ones I played, especially the Amiga version, were quite well done. And the one thing that the 16-bits had over the 8-bits was a mouse. And that really made the game a lot more playable.
Way different game.
Because the mouse gave you a lot. It was perfect to move that cursor around. I mean, you can still play with the controller, but I never did. But this does take me back to a time, this whole show, in fact, took me back to a time when Star Wars was still fun. And I enjoyed playing the games. They were simple and fun and well-executed. And that time has long passed. I'd also like to denigrate Star Wars for screwing me on our Thanksgiving marathon. Because the few snippets of Star Wars music that played during the PlayStation portion of that demonetized an 8-hour video.
Yeah.
So thank you, Star Wars. You screwed me again.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
Aaron, let's do a little thing we call the wheel.
Oh, go ahead and spin the thing.
No, how? Oh, sorry.
You stop freaking people out with your crap.
Oh, Aaron.
I cannot believe it.
We've got a little chat choice.
I knew I should have taken that piece off there.
Chat, we come to you in our hour of need.
Oh, God.
Please type your suggestions in chat on a system or a game type or a topic.
Look how happy they are.
Or a famous producer or studio.
Like
anything that you want.
It's already stupid to just write a game that features boats. Oh, I guess you mean boats, not boat. Like, I don't know if boats are featured in any game. You know, while the chat is going over this, I got a couple things to talk about. You know how you measure the success of your show is when you win awards on other shows that you're not even involved in, the brand. And by God, I was listening to the season-ending Pixel Gaiden. You'll recall Pixel Gaiden with Tim Drew, Cody Hoffman, Eric Nelson.
Yep, our good buddies.
They're also members of the Amigos Retro Game Network. They're well, two of them are out in California, and then Tim is way out there in England. They do a great show with retro and retro-related video game. You should check their show out. It's a bi-monthly, Brent. The big one. Big month. Anyways, they did a show this past month, and they mentioned, in fact, I think it was Tim that mentioned that one of his top moment, Pixel Gaiden moments of the year were involved us. For, if you'll recall last year, one of my favorite episodes, we did games that Pixel Gaiden got wrong. If you recall.
Yes.
And we both chose Eric Nelson to beat down. Maybe the next time we do that, we'll get games from Cody and Tim Drew. But we made the list. I think part of it was the drinking of the corn whiskey segment that got us over. And you'll recall we both dropped the hammer on Eric Nelson. I believe the game he picked that you hated was one of the Bomberman games.
Yes.
And I, of course, had to drop the hammer on Time Pilot 84. That dud. But we'd like to thank you guys for mentioning us on your show.
And, absolutely.
We had a lot of fun doing that. We did more crossover stuff, Brent, than we have done in the past. So,
all right,
what do we got
the
here?
The suggestions are in. We're going to pull out our random number generator. And for those watching live on YouTube, I do have your suggestions. So,
oh, well done. You got both sides, eh? It's kind of hard to monitor both chats.
We are going to say that the YouTube suggestion is number one. So if number one rolls, that's where we're going.
All right, so we're playing both sides of the table here. The
absolutely.
We like to think about YouTube for checking us out, too. We're still new over there.
All right, here we go. We are picking a random. Okay. The random number has been selected. We got to scroll up into the chat.
And the winner is...
Don't pressure me. This is hard.
I saw someone ask for games with the Equatorial Ducks. I don't think we're going to find another one of those.
That's the winner, Aaron.
So next week, we'll be playing, well, next time we do an ARG, it'll be games from LlamaSoft. Oh, my God. You're going to learn a lesson, Brent, in weirdness. As we pick games from LlamaSoft. Who suggested that one to Brent?
Steve Burtz.
See the Burtster, Steve Burtz. So once again, chat choice, that piece won't leave me alone. Well, at least they picked a good one. It's going to be games from LlamaSoft. LlamaSoft's got a lot of games. That's a Mentor's outfit, Brent. You probably don't know much about Jeff Mentor, but you will learn. You will learn, young Padawan, the weirdness of Jeff Mentor.
I do want to thank the support that Retro Rotation has seen thus far.
Yeah.
We are blown away at We knew going in that we were going to lose some people during the transfer, and those old Patreons, they are eventually, we're going to just turn them off because we don't want people to keep getting billed that, you know, maybe have forgotten about it or whatever. And the Retro Rotation it covers the Sunday shows. It covers the shows that Aaron and I do every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. EST. So, you know, that's your Coco Show, R. Sinclair, ARG Presents, and the Atari ST Show. And we very much appreciate everyone who has made the switch over. And if you haven't yet, if you're waiting to the end of the month so you don't get double billed, that's super awesome.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to double bill you. So that we completely understand that way of thinking.
Next week's Atari ST, I believe.
Atari ST. Excellent.
I'm going to see what comes up with the kid. I don't think they voted yet, so we'll find out. Any final thoughts above the final thoughts of Brent?
Nope.
We're out the door, everybody. We'll see you next time. And maybe the Force should be kind of with you.
I'll eat it.